This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 5:07. This is the evening edition with Sharmila and Lynn. The Parikatha National Government has been facing a lot of criticism over the double standards when it comes to the breach of COVID-19 SOPs. We see this being highlighted on social media. Various memes have come about. But this might not actually play as big a role when it comes to voters. So this got us thinking about what the issues actually are that matter when it comes to the election.
Yeah, and to be clear, this is not coming out of nowhere. So Ibrahim Sufian of the Merdeka Centre and a frequent guest on the station as well said in the Malaysian Insight that he's uncertain if double standards over these breaches of COVID-19 SOPs will affect Perikatan Nasional in GE15. And he said Malaysians aren't happy about it, but that there are bigger issues. And I think part of the reason why this is so interesting is because of what you were talking about, Sharmila, with the focus that's been given to it over the last few months. You know, it would seem to be a really big thing that people have been focusing on, that people have been angry about. And so to hear that it might not matter when it comes time to actually head to our polling stations, I think that's an interesting one. And it makes me wonder what whether it has to do with the issues that we're interested in, or whether it has to do with how long voters' memories are.
I think both those things, and I also wonder whether it goes back to that thing we keep talking about, the idea of bubbles, right? Because this displeasure, the criticism, when we talk about things happening online, when we talk about conversations happening online, we need to keep in mind that there are many people whose opinions are not expressed there. And, you know, often when it comes to election time, we find this out sometimes the hard way. And just some things to keep in mind, that it also matters who the other side is. And research shows that many voters, particularly Bumiputra voters, are not big fans of Pakatan Harapan. They are willing to put up with some efficiencies and weaknesses as long as the government protects, as long as there's a government in power that protects the wider community's interests. And we also cannot undermine that Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin actually has very strong personal appeal, and he has a very sizable support in the Malay electorate. So, you know, these are the other factors that are at play that may not necessarily be affected by these this antara dua darjat, or the discrepancy when it comes to how people are taken to task for breaching COVID-19 SOPs.
And it'll be interesting to see whether or not this is something that the opposition actually leans on, right? When it comes time to campaign, when it comes time to put forward specific manifestos, there, I said it, we're back to the word. But when it comes time to put forward your manifesto, when it comes time to actually tell voters what it is that you stand for and why what you stand for is not what the current party or what the other party can provide, I think it's interesting to see the different lines of attack that people will be taking. And also, if we look at the way that, you know, political campaigns usually run in Malaysia, and I think in other places too, it's a big mix of very sort of grand ideas and then very local concerns. So you have people talking about, well, we stand for transparency and we stand for, you know, a more progressive view on our economy, etc., etc. And then you also have that trickling down to, yeah, and when the time comes, we will fix your day one. So it's a very big mix in terms of what it is exactly that voters go for. And I think in GE14, for example, we saw that that is still being studied and debated even now as to why it was that that swing even occurred. And you had voters saying that it was about how they felt on the day.
Yeah, and you know, in that Malaysian Insight article, Ben Sufian, for instance, said that things may change. Yes, we come closer to the election. Other political analysts also said that if these SOP breaches were happening closer to when we actually go to the polls, then it might be a thing that's front of mind for them, you know, for voters. And I think you can't run away from the fact that a lot of these things, and that goes back to what you said about shorter memories, a lot of these things are things that are emotional as well as intellectual. And it's those two things coming together when we go to the polls that sometimes ends up changing who you might vote for. So let us know what's important to you when it comes to voting. What are the issues that matter when you decide who to vote for? Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with James Chai, Head of Commercial and Research at Invoke Solutions. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bigotry Free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
It is 5:14. This is the Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn. We're talking about what matters to voters today when they go to the polls. This is coming on the wake of an article in the Malaysian Insight about the fact that perhaps voters are not as invested in the discrepancies when it comes to how the COVID-19 breaches are addressed when it comes to politicians. And perhaps there are other issues that might end up impacting who they vote for. So we want to know, what are the issues that matter to you when you decide who to vote for during an election? Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're now crossing over to James Chai, Head of Commercial and Research at Invoke Solutions. Thanks for joining us, James.
Hi, it's good to be here.
James, so from your perspective, how much will this double standards for COVID-19 SOPs matter when it comes to the voting booth?
For me, I think the COVID double standard SOPs has been one of the more sustained dual digest events where there is a very clear class consciousness of sudden that Malaysians feel compared to other issues that are class-based between the privileged politicians and the common person. This one seems even more unfair than usual. Because in a situation where pandemic really affects everyone, that kind of class differences does seem to have a material impact on how they live. However, I think although this would come as a challenge to our culture of feudalism in the past, I think this would only breed a certain sense of general hatred for politicians, but it wouldn't be too specific in, let's say, changing a voting direction from one party to the other. There may be some impact on a very select few politicians who consistently breach SOPs, like Anwar Musa, but I don't think this would actually affect voting that much, because all it really gives rise to is really a general hatred across all politicians.
And, I mean, we're talking about this not knowing exactly when GE15 is going to be. And, you know, do voters usually have long memories, or have votes traditionally been more influenced by timeliness or recentness, you know, whatever's happened most recently in the run-up to the heading to the polls?
Yeah, I think Mahathir used to always coin this phrase that how Melayu muda lupa, and sometimes that gets extended to the larger popular masses, that somehow voters do not care too much about issues of the past, which means that even if politicians would violate a certain code of ethics or like violate certain laws, that you can actually make it back by a longer period of time, because people eventually forget about it. I think, however, that's a very misleading view of what has happened in the past, because although the voters wouldn't particularly remember all of the significant events throughout an administration, they would have a cumulative emotional impact. So these are little tipping points that eventually would boil into a general sentiment of the populace. So, for instance, right, like in the past, I think Barisan Nasional, before they have fallen in G14, would always misunderstand the lack of a credible alternative government as an acceptance of their corruption. So they would actually assume that you can be corrupt throughout that period, but as long as we come nearer to election, you just portray a very clean image, and therefore people will forget about all of the misdeeds that you've done in the past. I think that has always been a misunderstanding of that. There is general resentment of the people, but being pragmatic enough voters, they understand that without a credible alternative, I couldn't take that risk, and therefore I'm settling with what I have now with Barisan Nasional. So there is something good to be said about the wisdom of the crowd that we could still rely on, that events that are bad in the country will not be forgotten because they would just boil into a larger emotional sentiment.
So what issues would you say truly matter at the moment and that will influence votes?
I know that for a period of time when the pandemic was still quite bad, that has always been the key focus. I think around the world, voters still care for that issue the most, as in who can handle the pandemic the best. In that period of time, that one would trump over all other considerations, including the legitimacy of the government, and even on issues like race and religion, which seem less important because the pandemic is really the primary concern. But after we've gotten the vaccine and more regulations start to be liberalized, it comes back to the issue that will sting a lot of politicians, which is the economy. It remains the hardest issue to solve, and there's no sustained effort by the present government, or actually Pakatan's government, to actually try to alleviate that problem. And I think, although it is not clear yet that is the main issue that people care for, it will eventually become that, as it has been in GE13, in GE15.
If you could give us some insight, how do political parties usually plan what works in a campaign, especially surrounding GE and what doesn't, and how the pandemic might impact the way these campaigns take shape? Because as you rightly point out, it's going to, I think, unless, you know, everything is all well and good, it might end up dominating the narrative.
Now, one of the most shocking things about how politicians campaign is that although that is the single most important event in their entire political careers, very little is done in a way that is sort of like evidence-based or like data-backed in how they actually campaign. Now, I think all of us can actually recall that GE14 is probably one of the very first few moments, one of the first few elections, where the opposition and to some extent the government at that time realize that you can't actually just have big dramas, because that actually doesn't convert sensitive voters into voters of your party, right? So that took them a long time, because the traditional wisdom was that you would just try to go to a crowd that's as big as possible and try to preach the things that the party haphazardly agreed before the election, that those would be the few issues, right? Only very recently as well, they're starting to realize that each constituency actually cares for different issues. You cannot take the same one MDP issue and go everywhere around town. You actually have to adapt to local concerns. For instance, if one constituency really cares more for the army's retirement fund that was embezzled last time, that's something that would have much more an impact in converting voters into supporters, right? So I think, I don't know whether that has actually changed, but the general impression still remains that politicians don't quite know what works. They really just go on gut feeling. The basic notion that because I have seen my constituency on a weekly or monthly basis, and therefore I know what they care for the most, that may be quite misleading in the grand scheme of things, especially when elections are all about the fence-sitters. It doesn't really matter what your supporters tell you.
How important are individual personalities when it comes to the voter base?
Since Sheraton move, and this is one of the very odd blessings of Sheraton move, is that it has dissolved the boundaries between it actually has created this separate divide, whereby in the past, people used to always vote for parties and coalitions. In other words, sometimes you can just put anyone in a particular constituency, but as long as they are really loyal Pakatan supporters, you can just put any candidate and they'll vote for that person. However, after Sheraton move, the lines of coalition parties have actually dissolved. You're not quite clear who's on which side anymore. And therefore, you need to pay attention to individual personalities. And that is the rise in the trend that some of the surveys that we conduct whereby people, the traditional assumption is that for one constituency, the people who care for the personalities was only like 20+%. And this has actually risen to actually more than 50%. Because maybe that one starts to matter more, especially with the party crossovers, the betrayal and so on. It reminded the voters that I actually have to pay attention to the level of integrity of the individual MPs and adjuns that I vote in, how they are and what character makeup they have before I actually vote them, so that they don't actually betray me again.
So let's talk then about the Prime Minister. What is Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's appeal at the moment? What are his strengths and weaknesses?
The context to all of this is that Tan Sri Muhyiddin is extremely popular as an individual MP or Prime Minister, but his government is vastly unpopular. In other words, I think the data that's quite consistent across all surveys is that Muhyiddin's popularity is around 60+ to 70%, whereas the entire government's popularity is like around 50 or like 40%. So there is a lot of individual strength there. But I think his biggest strength is actually how lucky he was, which is he is a prime minister of circumstance, because one of the biggest crises, which is the pandemic, has resulted in him appearing on TV more, that people are forced to actually pay attention to the news because it is so urgent to them. So he was given this opportunity and this platform to actually give assurance to the masses. And he fit also the bill of a person who is not too arrogant, who is quite humble, and therefore it is very palatable to the rest of the populace. So that is his biggest strength that I think has contributed a lot to his popularity. His biggest weakness is the party that he's from. So if we want to compare the popularity of Muhyiddin's government to the Bersatu party's popularity, Bersatu is almost one of the most unpopular parties everywhere that you go. And this has breed a certain kind of insecurity in the Prime Minister, whereby he is very vulnerable to the withdrawal of support by UMNO and PAS. And therefore, most of the, like the recent UMNO General Assembly, they would take opportunities to try to threaten the Prime Minister to show that he really cannot do it without UMNO and PAS. And that would oftentimes make Tan Sri Muhyiddin very jittery. And the biggest culmination of that is the declaration of emergency, where he felt that he needed to just shut everything down because he cannot stand that constant threat against his power. So I think that has really contributed more to the position that he's in, that his individual popularity would not serve him for any longer.
James, in general, what role do emotions play when it comes to general elections? And what kind of sentiment do you think might influence GE15, considering this difficult period that the country's been through?
Every vote has always been based on emotion. And I think politicians themselves understand that that's the case. And that's why during campaign periods, typically 2 weeks, they would actually try to rile the crowd out as much as possible so that some of those emotions will actually spill over in terms of votes in favor of them. But I think we shouldn't misunderstand emotions here, because I think emotions typically always have a basis. Like I've mentioned just now, there is actually a tipping point concept, right, whereby things are actually culminated over a period of time. And during election, emotions actually form when campaign speeches actually formulate and articulate their concerns in a way that is very sort of very suitable for that time. So politicians actually don't have too much of an impact in changing or telling a person how they should think. They actually have more an impact in shaping, it's more like a storytelling role, trying to shape their concerns in a way that they can actually believe in, that they actually agree to before they actually go out to vote, right? So, but for G15, I think the primary emotion that would be at play is a general frustration on different issues. So some voters would be very frustrated with the infighting of politicians. some of them would be very frustrated with the instability of government. They just want something that doesn't change. And some would be frustrated with the economy and so on. But the general narrative, I think, would be that enough is enough. But that wouldn't translate to a convergence, which means that there is no common enemy here. Everyone would have their own separate enemies, but everyone would feel equally frustrated because of the issues that is confronting them.
James, thanks so much for speaking to us.
Thank you for having me.
That was James Chai, Head of Commercial and Research at Invoke Solutions. Let us know what the issues are that matter to you when you decide to vote. How will the pandemic affect that when it comes to GE15? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.